You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned.
We are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And filling in for Susie Hunt this week as Don Rosio.
Oh, guys, you know, I don't need the applause. I don't need the applause, guys. You're going to put that in post, right? Post?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. And yes, obviously Dawn is here with us today. Susie is a little under the weather. She will be back with us shortly, but she had to bow out for this episode. So everybody, you know, send some good vibes her way. But this is, we're wrapping up our school horror movies with episode 64, Urban Legend, from 1998. That's an hour and 39 minutes, directed by Jamie Blanks. The only thing I've seen of his is Valentine. Came out a couple years later with David Boreanaz.
Favorite movie.
It's not terrible, but yeah, it ain't good. but he also did Storm Warning and Long Weekend. I haven't seen those, but let's go around the table and see what everyone thought. Dawn, we'll start with you today. What do you think about this movie?
What do I think about this movie? Mike knows it was meant to be for me to be on this podcast this week, I guess.
Yep.
Because I'm mumbling now. Like 2 weeks ago, did I send you a message going, "Hey, have you guys done Urban Legends yet?" Because it was on television, or Urban Legend. I'm sorry, I always want to make a sequel. It already had a sequel. and he's like, "No, not yet." Blah blah blah. And then like 2 days later, it was on again. And then early in the week, I sent you a message saying it was on. And then next day, it was on. I was like, I mean, seriously, does Stars play any other movie besides this?
Right.
And the more and more I watched it, I went, I used to like this movie.
I'm glad you said that, because I have stuff to say, but go ahead.
Not the fact that I don't like the movie. It's just the more I watched it, I realized I would never be friends with these people. And it's kind of like, yeah, you know what? It's good that you died. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Maurice, what about you? What do you think of this?
Oh, I love this movie. I mean, it's got my sexy man, Jared Leto, in it. He's so beautiful. I actually like the movie. I guess I'll have to disagree with you two. Not that you didn't say you didn't like it, but I mean, I couldn't see myself being friends with these guys either. So,
right.
But of course, I only have like two friends. So,
and one of them's here.
Maybe.
Make you guess which one.
maybe I get desperate enough to be friends with them. No, I mean, the concept's good. I mean, it's okay. It's not great. It's basically Scream with urban legends. But
yep.
I thought the cast was pretty good.
Oh, it's got a great cast.
Yeah, the cast is really good. But the story's okay. Not very shocked at the big twist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second big twist.
You get that joke.
You get the joke at the end.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I don't have really much to say about this one. I mean, I'm actually, if I'm being honest, I'm surprised it got picked.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't think too many people actually like the movie.
Yeah, I remember it not being, like, I remember at the time it came out, it being pretty well received within the horror community, but, like, it basically is kind of an also-ran alongside of, like, Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, people were, at this point, kind of getting a little tired of the formula.
yeah, they're over it, and but no, I'm really surprised that it got picked, because it's not even like it's not even a movie where you can really find stuff to kind of even joke about.
I found stuff to joke about.
I was gonna say, yeah, but no, there's stuff for sure, but not like it's you know it's not a good bad movie,
right?
I guess, but oh, it's probably the first time I've watched it since the early 2000s, so it's been a long time. But do I think I'd watch it again now? Probably not, but that's about all I got.
I mean, for me, it's a mixed bag. Like, I do actually enjoy the film for what it is. I always love a good whodunit, even though I wouldn't call this a good whodunit. I like the concept. I like the acting. But, man, after it being so long from seeing it, like, I watch it, it's dated as shit. Like, there's so much in this movie that makes it very very much placed in the late 90s, early 2000s era, you know?
And, I mean, the music was good.
Oh, yeah, the music was definitely
good. I have to give it that.
It was definitely 90s alternative music.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Except for the one scene.
See, now, for me...
I don't really call that alternative.
I'm trying to figure out which scene you're talking about.
I think he's talking about the first one with Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Oh.
No. The Dawson no. Creek theme.
Oh, the Dawson Creek. Oh, that one.
That part was funny. But yeah, like, I don't know. This just... I remember really liking it when it first came out. Like, when I saw it in the theater opening night, I had a lot of fun with it. But after seeing so many other movies since then, I have to say the movie that I like much more than this that didn't get picked was Cry Wolf. Another college slasher whodunit, you know, mystery murder type of movie. And I really like that movie. This one, it's you know, obviously came before Cry Wolf, so that one had something to build on. But I don't know, there's a lot about it that I'm just kind of like, meh. You know, it's not that I dislike it, but it's nowhere near as good as I remember it being. I also have a bit of a funny story, so hopefully I'll remember to tell it at the end, because something about seeing it opening night. But so let's get into the cast here. We got Paul Gardner, played by Jared Leto, as Maurice had mentioned. Obviously, My So-Called Life, Fight Club, American Psycho, Requiem for a Dream, Suicide Squad, Blade Runner 2049, which can't recommend that movie enough. I freaking love that movie. Then we have Alicia Witt, Natalie Simon, played by Alicia
Witt. Excuse me.
No. I know what he wants to bring up. No.
Let's not forget about... you know where I'm going. Let's not forget about 30 Seconds to Mars. Yeah, lead singer of 30 Seconds to Mars, who I will admittedly say I like.
I'm not a fan.
I like 30 Seconds to Mars.
Yeah, I'm along with you on that one, Mike. I'm not a fan.
Well, to be fair, Maurice, you have a very wide music taste.
I've always been all over the place when it comes to music.
That is very true. Your music collection is pretty freaking massive, and you know, definitely a variety. But so we have next up we have Natalie Simon, played by Alicia Witt, Twin Peaks, Dune, The Walking Dead, Supernatural, Orange Is the New Black. Brenda Bates, played by Rebecca Gayhart, Scream 2, From Dusk Till Dawn 3, Urban Legends Final Cut.
Noctima commercial.
I was going to say Noctima commercial. And a movie we will probably have on here eventually, Santa's Sleigh. I know that got quite a lot of votes last year. Then we have Parker Riley, played by Michael Rosenbaum, Smallville, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Cursed, did Lex a bunch of voices. Luther. Yep, did a bunch of voices for the DC animated stuff.
Who I think is, of all the actors, he's probably the best, most talented actor out of the
ones out of this movie.
Michael Rosenbaum. No, he's definitely really good. And then we have Reese Wilson, played by Loretta Devine. Class Act, Urban Legends, Final Cut, Everybody Hates Chris, The Cleveland Show, Grey's Anatomy, Supernatural. She's all over the place. Damon Brooks, played by Joshua Jackson. Obviously, Dawson's Creek, Scream 2, Apt Pupil, Cruel Intentions, Shudder, Cursed, that... I know I mentioned it earlier, but that freaking horrible Wes Craven werewolf movie. Gosh. I hate that movie.
I hate that movie, too.
And I love Wes Craven, but man, I hate that movie. we got Sasha Thompson, Thomas, played by Tara Reid. American Pie, Alone in the Dark, The Crow, Wicked Prayer, the Sharknado films, The Big Lebowski. And then we have Dean Adams, played by John Neville. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, one of my favorite movies. Dangerous Minds, The X-Files, The Fifth Element, A Study in Terror. And The Weird Janitor is played by, I love that his title is actually Weird Janitor. played by Julian Richings. Naked Lunch, Cube, Mimic, Wrong Turn. Guy is in a ton of horror stuff.
Well, look at the guy.
Right. Well, he plays, what's his name? Is it Three Finger in Wrong Turn? The real Weasley little mutant. The creepy one of the three.
The creepy one?
Yeah.
You know what? I completely blocked that movie out of my head, so I couldn't even tell you. I hated that one.
Oh, I love that movie. I actually love all of those movies. They get progressively worse, but somehow still stay amusing.
I don't know about amusing.
Have you seen part 5 yet? Wrong Turn.
No, I probably never will unless I have to.
But it's got Doug Bradley in it. It's so good.
Yeah.
I seriously really I genuinely like that movie.
And this had Robert Englund in it.
This is true. I was going to say, next up, we have Professor William Wexler, played by Robert Englund. Obviously, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But he was also in Chud 2, Bud the Chud, a movie I've mentioned on here a few times. The Phantom of the Opera, The Mangler, Wishmaster, Strangeland, 2001 Maniacs, bunch of stuff. Then, I'm going to butcher this last name, but Tosh Ganari, played by Danielle Harris. Obviously, Halloween 4 and 5. Hatchet 2, 3, and 4, Eerie, Indiana, I can speak, the Halloween remakes, Rob Zombie's movies, See No Evil Part 2, another movie I've spoken a lot of on this show, and Stakeland, one of my favorite vampire movies. Then we have Michelle Mancini, played by Natasha Gregson-Wagner. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Ally McBeal, High Fidelity, and then Vampires Los Muertos, the one with John Bon Jovi in it. I seriously want to get that out here just because it's so ridiculous.
Seriously, do a month of just bad movies that you absolutely hate.
We've actually discussed that.
Don't we do that every month?
Oh, that's true. Never mind.
I'm kidding.
Then we have another horror icon playing Michael McDonald, also known as the gas station attendant, was Brad Dourif. So obviously the Child's Play movies, the Halloween remakes, The Wizard of Gore, Blue Velvet, Dune, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Lord of the Rings. Like, guy is just a legend. And then the killer is played by Matt Berman. War of the Worlds, Virus, Bless the Child, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, Hemlock Grove. Again, a lot of horror stuff. So, the most basic plot for anyone who hasn't seen this and is listening, it's some college students start to suspect that a series of bizarre deaths are connected to certain urban legends. So, they start to investigate and uncover all kinds of craziness. But, the film opens up. It's a rainy night looking like a bird's eye view down at a river, which will play into it later on in the movie. And then we see the title card and the opening credits. We see a woman driving down a wooded road at dusk. And we find out this is Michelle. She's listening to Under the Covers with Sasha, the voice of Pendleton University. And now this is like one of our first mentions of an urban legend. The caller is talking to Sasha about, quote unquote, borrowing her roommate's birth control pills and replacing them with baby aspirin. Now, this part pissed me off because she goes, now my roommate is pregnant and she has to leave campus. And where am I going to find a roommate this late in the semester? I was like, you bitch.
I said the same thing. I was like, bitch caller, baby aspirin. Where the, you know, you should be getting kicked out because your right? roommate got pregnant. But your fault. But I want to add, like, what college has a sex talk radio program? Like,
right?
Like, all this dean is against so many things. Why would he allow that?
Well, he's not against sex ed.
Especially the next call that they're describing, which is a little later. But yeah, it's like, whoa, hey now. That's a little much. But so Michelle takes her eyes off for the road for a moment and tries to grab a cassette from the backseat. Now, this is our first glimpse of something possibly wrong. We see the puffy coat in the backseat, kind of like laying on the floor, like crouched down by the floor. So it's like, if you're paying close enough attention, you see something's back there. And then, you know, she almost gets hit by an oncoming car because she's swerving all over like a dumbass. And she regains control of the car, pops the cassette in, and starts playing Total Eclipse of the Heart. And I said, we get Chekhov's Turn Around.
Yeah, I just put foreshadow, you know?
Right? So it starts raining pretty heavily, and we see that she's on empty. So she passes, I love it, because she passes the brightly lit nice gas station, and then, like, not even a couple of miles up the road, there's the creepy, run-down, dilapidated gas station. And, like, as soon as her gas light goes on, she's like, oh, God, oh, please let me make it, please let me make it. I'm like, you got, like, a good 30 miles. Like, what are you worried about? You know? It's like, come on. But so she pulls in and honks, and a stuttering Charles Lee Ray comes out and asks, out of gas? And she gives him her card and tells him to fill it up. So while he's doing that, he looks in the back seat and his eyes get all big. And then he runs inside with the credit card and while the gas tank is filling up, and he comes back out and knocks on the window telling her there's a problem with the card. And she's like, smart. She wants to know, right? She's like, she wants to know what's going on. And he tells her that the credit card company is on the phone and wants to talk to her if she would just come with him. So she kind of sighs heavily, grabs her coat and a can of mace, and goes in with him. Now, she walks in ahead of him. He follows in, closes the door and locks it, and is looking out the window. She picks up the phone that's off the hook and gets the fast busy signal. So now she's panicked, like, oh shit, what is he trying to do? The poor guy stutters, so he can't really tell her. He's trying to gather himself. She spazzes and maces him and then breaks the window and jumps out, running toward her car, crying and hitting the unlock button. Now, he's trying to warn her. He's running behind her, trying to stop her. She gets in the car. He gets in front of the car. She runs his ass over, you know? And then he's like, finally is able to yell, there's someone in the back seat. And so she starts speeding away. And she goes back to listening to fucking Total Eclipse of the Heart. And we see someone sit up slowly in the back seat holding an axe. And then she sees him in the rear view. It's too late. She didn't turn around. And she gets the axe to the head. We see the axe chop out the window, blood all over it. So it's like, bye-bye, Michelle.
Turn around. You're about to get your head chopped off.
Turn around or you'll die.
But you know what? Good. Because you know what? I didn't like her because she called him a freak show because he had a stutter. She'd be still alive if she'd just been patient.
Right? Mm-hmm. I don't care that he was Charles Lee Ray.
Right. Pixie cut, bitch. No.
The Hillside Strangler. Oh, man. Or Lakeshore. Yeah, Lakeshore Strangler. I said Hillside. But yes, we cut to Pendleton University, and we see the radio station where Sasha is doing her radio show. Now, the next caller is worried about swallowing. Sasha's like, oh, had yourself a little frat boy protein shake, did you? It's like, oh, Jesus. So, and then she goes on about how she's worried because she can feel them swimming around inside of her. Oh, and I do like the bit of shade Sasha throws at her, because he's like, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on your choice of sexual activity, because baby, the world ain't ready for you to reproduce. Oh, that cracked me up.
She is probably, and this is Tara Reid we're talking about, probably the smartest character in this movie.
Right? I would say. Which is really odd.
Yeah.
But, so now we cut out to Natalie, Parker, and Brenda listening to Sasha while in the students' like coffee lounge. And all I could think of is this came on the heels of when Friends was super popular, and it totally looked like the coffee house in Friends, where it's like the old couches and recliners sitting around, or the lounge chairs.
You mean like every coffee house in the late 90s?
Okay, yeah, good point, good point.
The only thing was missing was like a chess set in the middle, and it probably was there, to be honest.
Right, the nerdy guy from later was playing it in the corner.
Right.
Oh, man. But so now they're listening to Sasha talk, and then they start talking about the urban legend of the campus, which is the murder at Stanley Hall. So apparently years ago, I think it was 25 years ago, they said?
Mm-hmm. I think so. 25.
So they said a teacher went nuts. He got an axe and went room to room in Stanley Hall, pounding on the dorms. Anyone who answered, he killed him, and then eventually killed himself. And Parker goes on to say, so to commemorate it, every year they throw this giant party. And then Paul comes in and tells them it's a myth. Like every college campus has one of these stories. You know, it's not true, blah, blah, blah. And then Parker is convinced it is, and that the college just covered it up because who's going to go to murder you? And
conspiracy theories,
right?
Like, I get the feeling that if you know Parker would have become an anti-vaxxer, like that's when I get the feeling.
I kind of concur there. Parker's a dick, man. Like, he really is. But so they all have this conversation about how it is it fake, is it not? Paul decides that he's got to go do work, so he takes off, and then
No, the simpler times comes in.
What's that?
Oh, he got a beeper. Off. Yeah.
Goes off.
Simpler forgot time. That.
There weren't really cell phones around then.
That's true.
There's another simpler time later on.
There's a few.
But there's a distinct one later on that only us children of the late 90s or teenagers of the late 90s would know.
So yeah, so they
and here's the part where I said he's a babe.
What, when Brenda was making googly eyes at him?
Yeah, she's like, he is such a babe.
Yeah, we find out at this point that Brenda has the hots for Paul, and she's kind of gushing to Natalie about how much she likes her or likes him. And so then we cut to Natalie and Brenda walking over to Stanley Hall, and they decide to do Bloody Mary. So, which is funny, because it's like, I thought Bloody Mary had to be, like, in front of a mirror. But, whatever. So
movie's got a movie.
Right. I like that. Movie's got a movie. So they go and stand in front of Stanley Hall. It's all boarded up. And they do the whole Bloody Mary thing. And then they hear this, like, moaning and screaming coming from, like, nearby. And they both get all scared. And then Damon jumps out and scares them. Oh, that rascal. Womp womp, fake scare.
As I put, Slim Shady shows up because they had that typical 90s dye job.
Oh, God, yes. The bright blonde. Oh, man. So now we see Natalie heading back to her dorm. And I love this. This is such a movie thing to do. She goes into the dormitory or like the campus. She opens the door, turns around, and walks in backwards, closing the door. Who actually enters a room that way? Me. You know, because it's, of course you do. But it's like, every time I see that in a movie, I'm like, well, you know something's going to be behind them. Like, that's the whole reason they're doing that. And sure enough, there's the creepy janitor jump scare. And it's like,
one of many old man jump scares in this movie, by the way. Like, this was filled with old man jump scares, is how I put it.
It's very true. So now she goes to her room and walks in on her roommate, Gothy McPlot device, getting fucked. She turns on the light, sees Tosh getting, you know, having sex, and Tosh yells at her to turn the lights off, so she quickly turns it off, and then just gets ready for bed with her back to the hibbity dibbity happened behind her. And
why does Danielle Harris always seem so bitchy in her sex scenes?
I don't know.
This is such a 90s thing here too, because obviously, oh my god, she's goth, so she's gotta be bitchy and a nympho. Like no, I knew a lot of goth people, none of them were like that.
Same. Don't forget Addicted to Lithium.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh yeah.
And suicidal. Well, obviously she's suicidal.
Of course. Oh, so many stereotypes. But so we see Natalie, she puts her headphones on, goes to sleep while Tosh is doing her thing. And then we cut to the next day in class. We're in Professor Wexler's class. He's teaching them about urban legends and modern day folklore. He's going over particularly the call coming from inside the house. And Brenda says, you know, she speaks up and says, well, that actually really happened to a girl in my town. And he assures her that it didn't. He's like, everybody in here grew up hearing that that story happened to someone in their town, but it didn't. And then we get Chekhov's watch alarm as Wexler's watch goes off and he shuts it down. And Brenda and Natalie are kind of giggling amongst themselves. And I didn't write down the whole conversation, but basically it was like he was saying that the moral of the story is young ladies watch the children. And she said that maybe the moral is, what did she say? Don't babysit or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so he forces her to come up and help him with an experiment. So he gives her a little baggie of Pop Rocks and tells her to eat them, which she does. And then he offers her a Pepsi and she backs away scared. And he's like, what's wrong? Aren't you thirsty? And she's like, no. And he finds out, or like he makes her admit the reason she's scared is because she heard that if you mix the two, it'll make your stomach and intestines explode. And he goes, has that happened to anyone or anyone you know? And she goes, yeah, Mikey from the cereal commercials. And then Parker in the background goes, Mikey likes it. Which, it was so fucking dumb, but it caught me off guard and I started cackling.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's trying to explain to her that obviously that's fake. And he shows her a slide of, like, Mikey as the little kid. And then an adult Mikey as, would they say, like, some kind of actor in New York City or whatever. So she's like, she still wouldn't drink it. So Damon volunteers to do it, runs up there, eats the Pop Rocks, drinks the soda, and Wexler's like, see, nothing happened. And then Damon starts convulsing, falls to the ground, and like starts spewing up the sugary goo. Everyone's freaking out. Parker's like, he's gonna explode. And then Damon just smiles. It's like, oh, you asshole. So Wexler is highly unamused by this.
As he should be. He's trying to teach these students, and then here's this little douchebag.
Just dicking around.
Right.
Yeah.
So class is dismissed, and we see Natalie and Brenda walking across campus, and there's all this hullabaloo happening up ahead where the dean and Reese, the security guard, are snatching up papers out of people's hands. They see before all the papers are taken away that it says lunatic on campus, and it's about Michelle being murdered. So Paul shows up, sees Reese and the dean taking all the papers, gets pissed and wants to know why. The dean refuses to comment, but Reese tells him that basically, like, you know, she's not going to let him stir up trouble on the campus, and that both the U.S. News and the World Report said that Pendleton is the safest school in the country, and she intends to keep it that way. So they're all pissed off at him for stirring up the students. So Paul comes up and asks Brenda and Natalie for a quote. Brenda gets all excited. She's like, I'm saddened and moved. It's
like, that was the 90s thoughts and prayers. That was the 90s.
It so was. Oh, man. And then Natalie.
She's just trying to get in his pants.
That's right? True.
She's batting her eyes at him. I'm saddened and moved. It's like, oh, you look real sad. But Natalie gets pissed off and says, this was someone's life. Did you ever spend 1 minute thinking about it? And he goes, no, I didn't. But because of my story, 3,500 students will. I think that's enough to help me sleep at night. And then she storms off pissed and Brenda goes with her.
To be honest, he's not wrong.
Right. Exactly. Like, hey, he's got to bring the news to him. But no, we cut to a TV reporting on the murder and they're back in the coffee shop again. And we see on the TV, they're talking about the murder and a manhunt for the missing gas station attendant, who is the prime suspect in the case. Now, the kids are sitting around talking about the possibility of a lunatic actually being on campus. And if anyone actually knew Michelle, everybody claims they didn't know her, except, oh, I'm sorry. And before that, Damon says that he hopes there is a killer on campus because he's going to be gone all weekend on a snowboarding trip. So it's not going to affect him. Damon's a douche.
Movie's got a movie. There you go again. Got to slide that one in.
Right. It's a little important snowboarding trip there.
Yeah.
But so everyone's saying that they didn't know her. And then Damon speaks up all sad and goes, I knew her. And I'm really going to miss her, too. She gave great head. And then everyone starts giggling. He goes, get it? And then Natalie looks, oh, come on. That scene was pretty funny. And then we cut away to Tosh on a website called Goth for Goth, which, oh, my God. I remember the late 90s chat rooms and message boards.
Yeah.
Yes, that was
so much
that
better.
Was,
I miss them.
That
guys.
Was another simpler AIM. Times.
It really X was. Messaging. Right.
Because this is when she comes in and she picks up the phone and the rotary not the rotary the modem noise is going off.
Yeah.
See, there's simpler times right there too. You kids don't know. You kids don't know the pain of having to download a song on Napster for 3 hours.
Oh my God!
And being afraid Metallica was going to come after you.
Lars was gonna be looking for you. Oh man, yeah, this whole sequence. So Natalie comes in and she finds a lithium bottle on the floor and hands it over to Tosh, who looks all embarrassed. And then Natalie goes to pick up the phone and we get the modem sounds like you said, and I have it in here too, simpler times. And then Tosh loses her shit. She's like, it's my phone line too, and storms off in a huff. So Natalie listens to her messages, and there's one from her mom talking about how tragic it is that what happened to Michelle. So it's like, oh, wait, maybe Natalie does know her. We see her dig
dun,
out.
Dun, dun.
Right. A little twist. We see Natalie dig out a yearbook, and we see photos of the two of them as head cheerleaders. So clearly they knew each other. And then out of nowhere, Damon shows up and wants to see if she wants to go to a party and says that Parker is going to pierce his dog's nose. And I forget, Hootie. He goes, Parker's going to pierce Hootie's nose. And she goes, Hootie's a dog. And he goes, yeah, but that's no reason he can't be trendy. It's like, dude, don't pierce your dog's nose. That's fucked up.
At the time of this movie, I did have a pierced nose. So I will say that.
Well, that's bullshit.
Piercing people's nose, fine. You get to choose that. But piercing your dog's nose, come on.
That's like it was the it thing to do, man. Come on.
That's like, have you guys seen the people that are tattooing their dogs?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's fucked up. Come on. Like, if you have to drug them and knock them out, like, come on. This ain't right. But so they're sitting there talking for a minute. He sees that she's pretty sad, and he's like, well, we don't have to go to the party. He goes, we can just go somewhere and talk. He goes, I don't really want this getting out around campus, but, you know, I can actually be a nice guy and listen. And so she kind of smiles and goes with him. So
she knows his bullshit.
Right. Well, it's funny because I think at this point she kind of believes maybe he's trying to be nice. And then she quickly catches on to what he's up to. But in the car, we get Chekhov's beer. That beer is important. And he's trying to get the junker started, like, thing won't turn over, which, again, you know, it's going to be important. And finally does, and the radio cues up, and it plays a few notes from the Dawson's Creek theme song, and he quickly shuts it off. Now, his reaction to that, I have to wonder if, like, he knew that they were going to play that, if they, like, played it on set to fuck with him, and then they just kept it in the movie.
Yeah, because he looked surprised.
He really did, and then he was because he kind of laughed too. Like, and they cut right as he kind of laughed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I wonder if that was like if there was something else that was supposed to cue up, and he was supposed to turn off the radio. Like that was supposed to be what he was doing. But if on set, maybe they actually played the theme to fuck with him. But anyway, so then they end up going off to the woods, and they're parked out in the woods talking. And she admits to knowing Michelle and all that, and like how fucked up it is to know that she's dead now and that she, you know, she's never really lost anybody. And he tells her he knows what she's going through. He goes, because I lost my girlfriend. She died. And she goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And he goes, yeah, she had a syndrome. And
yeah, then he said she had a syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't exist as IS is syndrome.
Exactly. I love it because at that point you can see she clearly gloms on to the fact that this guy's full of shit, but she continues listening to him anyway. And he goes, I didn't want to start dating again, but then I realized, why am I being so selfish? I still have so much love to give. And she goes, aw, you do? And he goes, yeah, and Natalie, you're in need of loving. And she goes, oh, I am? And he goes, yeah, you're lonely, you're repressed, you're aching to break loose. Those are the types of problems only a man can fix. And she goes, and I suppose you're that man. And he goes, well, yeah, no. And he moves in for a kiss and she shoves him back. And she goes, nice try, Damon. That was a fairly good impersonation of a human being. And he goes, I understand you're afraid, but you don't have to be afraid anymore, Natalie. And he moves in again and she fucking slugs him in the face and yells at him to start the car. And he's like, okay, that hurt. Oh,
and then
man.
She said, they said something else and she's like, one black eye or two?
Well, yeah, because he tries to move in for a third time and he goes, you know, you don't have to be such a bitch. It's like, oh yeah, that's gonna win her over. And then that's when she's like, yeah, one black eye, Damon, or two. And he backs off and goes, I'm gonna go take a piss. So he gets out, walks out into the woods to take a leak. We hear some twigs snapping behind him, and then the killer runs up behind him and wraps a rope around his throat. So we cut back to Natalie waiting in the car, and kind of a few minutes go by, like she's looking at her watch. She gets out of the car and looks around for Damon, starts yelling for him. The killer pops up out of nowhere, scares the shit out of her. She jumps back in the car and starts rolling up the window and tries to start it. Now, while she's struggling with the car, we see the killer attach a rope to the back of the car. Suddenly, Nat hears like banging on the roof of the car. And we pan up and we see it's Damon hanging from a tree above the car, desperately trying to get his footing. Now, I have a question here. Like, how did the killer, like, Damon is still with him.
I said the same thing. Like, yeah. How did the killer string him up there without Natalie seeing him? Like, you obviously she would have heard a struggle, like, right. Before, like,
and maybe the killer has that crazy strength that we've discussed in previous films where the killer is inhumanly strong.
And fast by walking slow, too, because I called that out later.
Well, I mean, that does happen with people with mental health issues.
True, true.
And when we find out the reveal.
Right.
It turns out that person is crazy, so.
But it's like, this is a very high level of strength to be able to take, because it's not like he was knocked out. He was still struggling. So she dragged his ass up, like, over the car and strung him up in the tree. It's like, wait, what? But anyway, so Natalie starts, she's spazzing out at the fact that she's hearing stuff on the roof, and then the killer jumps down on the windshield. So she finally gets the car started, drives forward, which yanks Damon up in the tree, hanging him. So she ends up hitting the end of the rope, can't go any further. The killer had fallen off the car at that point. Killer jumps back up, jumps onto the windshield, and starts stomping it. In a panic, she throws the car in reverse, causing the killer to fall off, but also causing Damon to come crashing down out of the trees onto her windshield, dead. Natalie screams, runs off into the night. So, I mean, again, if you don't think about the logistics, the scene is really well done. But when you start breaking it down and thinking about how the hell did the killer get him up there, it stops making sense.
And then next thing you know, Renacop Reese is there.
Yep. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the only thing that may have happened is the killer may have put the rope there ahead of time, but how was the killer going to know that was where they were going? That was my only, like, maybe this happened.
Like, I think it's, we should just say it's movie magic.
Movie got a movie.
Movie got a movie. I like it. So, yeah, we cut to Reese, as Reese had mentioned, watching coffee and reenacting it in her office. And Natalie comes running in and tells Reese that Damon is dead. They go off to investigate, and once they arrive in the little clearing in the forest where they were, there's no car, no Damon, no rope, all of it's gone. The only thing remaining is Chekhov's beer can, which Reese picks up and sniffs, and then looks at Natalie like, oh, she's drunk. Nat assures her that, you know, that they were there, that they were attacked, and maybe it was that gas station attendant guy that killed Michelle. And Reese tells her that they caught that guy already. So now we know that Charles Lee Ray has been apprehended.
Again.
And that's, I think, the last we kind of hear about that, too, because, you know, it's like, yeah, you caught him, but did he get got arrested, but was he set free?
Right. He's just rotting away in prison.
Yeah.
Like, aw, poor gas station attendant. But then we cut to the friend's coffee shop. And Parker is explaining to everyone that it was a mannequin hanging from the tree, that Damon uses it to scare pledges. This was clearly based on the urban legend that Damon, and of course Damon would know about it since he's in Wexler's class. He said that he was messing with her. He's like, he's the best prankster on campus. And then they're like, okay, well, let's say it is a prank. Then why isn't he here admiring his handiwork? And he goes, snowboarding weekend trip. He's off for the weekend. You know, so now it's like, oh, okay, we have our, we have our explanation that clearly it wasn't Damon, right? So then Natalie realizes that the guy in the backseat of the car, you know, the whole thing that killed Michelle, was also an urban legend, and suggests that maybe there's a killer out there copying urban legends. Parker gets excited and goes, ooh, so what's he going to do next? Spider eggs and bubble gum, or maybe ram a gerbil up a celebrity's ass? Parker was good. He's a douche, but I liked him. And then he goes on to tell Natalie to call the resort that Damon is staying at and confirm if he's there or not, if she's still scared. So we cut to Natalie going into her room. Once again, Tosh is on the Goth for Goth website.
Gothy McGotherson, yes.
Gothy McPlot device. And then Nat wants to use the phone, and she's like, no phone for you! Like, just flips out. So now we cut to Natalie at a payphone. Again, simpler times. She's calling the resort, and the lady at the desk is telling her that there was a guy fitting Damon's description, but since he's not the one who paid for the room, it's not in his name and all that, she has no way of guaranteeing his name. She said she'll leave a message, but they might not check with the messages, so she doesn't know if he'll get back to her or not. So we cut to later that night. We see Natalie in the library. Now, here's another horror movie cliche. The girl alone in the spooky library at night. And we see a shadowy figure pass by the bookshelves. And it's like, oh, come on. So Nat looks scared. She's hearing noises. She grabs the big encyclopedia of urban legends. And then we suddenly get a Sasha jump scare. And she, with her big book of Kama Sutra.
There's another note of it. What college high school, college high school, college library has a copy of the Kama Sutra in it?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm sure they do. Not that I would know from experience.
I was going to say, Entrip did not.
I mean, to be fair, Entrip didn't have a lot of stuff.
That's true.
But, she's talking about how she wants to see if Parker will participate in a little homework, and she's going through the Kama Sutra. And Nat goes, does he have a choice? And she just goes, no. So I thought that was funny. And then they start looking through the urban legend book, and we get to one in particular that Sasha comments on and says that it's not an urban legend, that it's a real thing. It's the gang initiation high beam, where they drive around at night with their lights off, and the first person who flashes the high beams at them, they turn around and start chasing that person, and they supposedly kill them. That's how they get into the gang. So Sasha's like, you know, no, that's totally true. Now, that's going to be important later. So then she leaves. She takes her leave, and she's like, I'm going to do my homework. So she's going to go find Parker. Now, we cut to Tosh on the computer again, and she's typing, any gothic guys on campus looking to hook up, I am me. And then someone responds, we're on similar dark paths, which I couldn't stop laughing at. And then she goes, "What you into?" And he goes, "Lithium." She goes, "My type of guy," with a little winky face. Now we come back to Natalie in the library, and she looks in the back of the book to see who the last person was to check out the book. And of course it was Damon. So now it's like, okay, Parker's story is making a little more sense. Then we cut back to Tasha on the computer. She says, "Where are you at?" Says, "Close." She says, "Tease." And then, "Gonna go get ready. Tell me what room you're in." Now we see Tasha go and spruce herself up in the bathroom. And I got a problem with this whole scene. She comes back, and on the screen, it says, "Yours." And it's all caps and flashing for some reason. Like, why? Why was it flashing? Like, that's not how IMs work. Like,
no. They weren't fancy like that back then. You could maybe change the color, but that was about it.
Right, and it was a pain in the ass to do that. Like, you had a couple options. But it's like, come on. So, okay. Again, this is, what, 1998, I believe we said? Yes. So, 1998. Yep. Very simple times. Now, we already saw what kind of shitty internet connection they had. Where was this person, where was the killer responding from to say "Yours" to be in her room? Because she didn't have no fucking Wi-Fi. That wasn't happening. So the killer ain't hiding out in her room using her Wi-Fi. Like, what the it doesn't make any sense. But as soon as Tosh sees that, the killer jumps out and they start fighting. The Nat's coming back to the room, and as she's on her way to her room, she passes by another student who says, "Sounds like Elvira's raising more than the dead in there." And she's like, "Oh, thanks for the heads up." So she goes in expecting Tosh to be fucking around again. She comes in. Right as she's walking in, the killer yanks out the cords to the computer and the light, the table lamp. So the room goes dark. And then Nat goes to turn on the lights, but then stops herself, remembering, you know, what happened before. Like, "Oh, nope, don't want to do that." Now, why did Tasha's muffled cries for help sound strikingly similar to her sex noises? Like, did you guys notice that?
Yes.
So Natalie puts on her headphones and goes to bed while Tasha's being strangled to death in the background.
And unless she was being strangled during sex.
Hey, good point. Maybe. You know, she is goth, so we got to live up to the stereotypes.
Right.
But so the next morning, Natalie wakes up and she sees Tosh is like covered up, but her arm is hanging out from her bed. And there's blood dripping from her arm onto the floor where we see two paintbrushes. So she gets up, goes over to the bed, yanks the covers back, and we find Tosh dead with her wrists slit. And on the wall, painted in blood, is "Aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light?" So, another urban legend. So, I wrote here, I was like, I have questions. How the fuck did the killer know she wouldn't turn the lights on in the first place? Was there a backup urban legend to use if she did attempt to turn on the lights? Like, what is happening here? You know, like, some of these urban legends fit a little too easily.
But... Well, there's a reason why this writer only wrote a couple of movies.
Good point. But so now we cut to paramedics taking Tosh out of the room. And I wrote, some random stank ass bitch yells, "Better check her pulse. She's looked like that for years." I'm like, fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, wow.
She wasn't goth. So she, you know, she didn't get the life.
Right. So, oh, she was
weird.
So fuck her. She's dead. I don't care.
Right.
Horrible human being. But, so now we see Paul and Brenda watching as Natalie talks to the Dean and Reese. Now, both the Dean and Reese think that Tosh killed herself. Natalie argues that she definitely didn't and that there was someone else in the room. And then Reese asks her, she's like, well, did you see anyone in the room? And she says, no, but I sensed that there was someone there. And she's like, but did you see anyone? She's like, well, no. And then the Dean's like, well, why didn't you turn on the light? Why didn't you check on her if you heard a struggle? And she goes, well, I've walked in on Tosh having sex before, and it's not something I wanted to see again. So she's trying to let them know, like, hey, you know, this is not out of the ordinary for my roommate to be fucking when I'm trying to sleep. Which is, again, that's a shitty situation. But I love this because Reese is like, I see no signs of foul play here. And I went, since when did security guards do murder investigations? Like,
right.
What the fuck? And then the
she also carries a gun. So let's
right, but I mean there are armed guards. Like at least I can buy a little bit more. But it's like you don't carry out a fucking murder invest, even a suicide on campus. Like the cops would be there. What the fuck's going on? Mm-hmm. So like none of that made sense.
I did write this little note about Natalie going, my note was like, why are you so sad? If 90s college movies taught me anything, you're about to get straight A's for the rest of your semester.
It's funny because it's
that, true. The dead man on campus, that was the whole concept.
Right.
Your roommate died, you get straight A's.
Right. Oh, man, I forgot about that movie. So, anyway, I was like, I call shenanigans on this whole thing. And the dean is convinced that Tosh committed suicide. He said that she was suicidal. You know, she was on different medications, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, of course, no murder. You know, and the security guard has done her investigation, so we're good. Paul tries to talk to Natalie for the paper, but not about Tosh. He tells her that he wants to ask her some questions about Michelle. And he pulls out the picture from the yearbook. Like a photocopy of it, basically showing her like, hey, I know that you knew her. And she says, how come you didn't tell me? And she goes, I didn't want you exploiting her death any further than you already have. She then lets slip that she's about her thoughts on Damon and Tosh being murdered. And he goes, whoa, 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 what are you talking about? He goes, can we talk? He's like, off the record. So we cut to them having had the conversation. She's filled him in about Damon, filled him in about Tosh. He's still not convinced and wants to know that even if there was an urban legend killer on campus, why would it be there and why now? She sees
I was gonna say, he says something about an urban legend killer, such a stretch. And I wrote, yeah, but is it like the right. Zodiac killer was such a stretch then, if you think about that, or the alphabet killer is such a stretch if you think about it. Like, why would an urban legend killer be such a stretch?
Right, exactly. It's like, you know, if they've already decided to, you know, go along and start murdering people, you know, yeah, having a weird motive like that doesn't seem to be any more of a stretch. So, but he asked the whole why here, why now, and she sees the flyer for Parker's Stanley Hall party, and says because it's the 25th anniversary of the Stanley Hall murders. So they go do some research on the murders and to see if they were ever even true. And they notice that there's like the school history books, like the yearbooks, but also what had happened on the campus, all that. The yearbook for 73 is missing, which is the year of the murders. So they're like, well, what the hell? What's going on here? Why isn't it here? And then they confront the creepy janitor and ask him how long he's been there. He's like, too fucking long. And so they're like, you know, do you know anything about the Stanley Hall murders? And he's hesitant and then eventually says, go talk to Wexler, and he walks away. So they head over to Wexler's office. He's not there. So, of course, they break in because why not? And starts
a little B&E between friends. Come on. Right.
So they get in there and start snooping around. And then Nat finds a hidden door because, of course, she does. Like, it's totally fucking Scooby-Doo style up in here. And she finds a little hidden door and immediate jump scare because the killer's coat is hanging right behind the hidden door. And there's a whole little room back there with all this, you know, random, like, paraphernalia, dolls and masks and stuff. And then there's
a Freddy Krueger doll.
Wasn't there a Freddy Krueger doll? I missed that.
There is. But if you're reading IMDb, it says just before you see the axe, but I think you see it later when Reese finds the room and it's like hanging over one of the paintings on one of the other walls. But there is a doll that looks like Freddy Krueger. Yeah.
Oh, I totally missed that. Oh, man, I'm going to have to go back and look now. That's cool. But yeah, she finds an axe in the little hidden room. So now they hear footsteps coming. So Paul goes into the hidden room with her. They close the door and they hear the door open up. someone walk around, and then they're waiting, listening. They hear the footsteps go toward the door again. The door closes. So, like, okay, well, the coast is clear. Paul opens up the hidden door and comes out, and behind him, we see a bookcase door open. And he's like, oh, yeah, the coast is clear. She comes out, and she closes the bookcase door, and there's Wexler just standing behind the door.
Old man jump scare.
Yep. We get our little Wexler jump, and now we cut to the dean's office. So it's Wexler, Reese, Paul, and Natalie talking to the dean, and the dean is pissed that they broke into a teacher's office and then accused him of murder. And
not only did you break in, but now you have the audacity to accuse him.
Right. And then Natalie's like, but we found an axe. And Wex was like, that's a prop for one of my folklore classes.
A folklore class that she takes, too, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, like, she's too busy gossiping with Brenda to pay attention.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then he's like, he's pissed. He's like, I can't believe you would even suggest that I would have anything to do with Michelle's death. So Paul asks Wexler to tell him about the Stanley Hall massacre. Wexler looks highly uncomfortable, and the dean asks both Wexler and Reese to leave and give them a moment, give him a moment alone with them. So now we see Dean, Natalie, and Paul just sitting there talking, and he tells her that he's looked at her personal file after they talked about Tosh. And then he says probation for reckless endangerment. And she says it was just for a year. I'd already been accepted here. And he said, which was lucky because we usually don't accept students with a criminal record. And then he looks at Paul and says, as for you, young man, you're off the paper effective immediately. Now, Paul protests this, saying the dean doesn't have that power. And the dean kind of laughs at him. He's like, oh, I didn't make this decision. Your editor did. And he goes, we talked today. So basically, Paul's shit out of luck.
Yeah.
So now Paul and Natalie leave. He argues with her and wants to know, like, what the fuck was up with the reckless endangerment. He's like, I think you owe that to me since, you know, you basically just ruined my college career. And she gets mad and says that it was back in high school. It doesn't matter now. And he figures out that it has something to do with Michelle. So we cut from that to Brenda getting in the pool. And we see Natalie heading over to the pool to talk to Brenda. And as she's heading through the gym, whatever it is, the building that has the pool, we see her pass by a TV that's the weather on there. They're playing I can't speak today. She passes by a TV with the news on it, and they're talking about the third act storm, that ever-present third act storm in a slasher movie. So she goes into a room overlooking the pool and watches Brenda swim. And then suddenly the killer walks in, but Brenda doesn't see him. Dun, dun, dun. Natalie's screaming and yelling and pounding on the windows, trying to get Brenda's attention. The killer walks along the edge of the pool, looking down at Brenda, then stands at the front of it and starts to slowly unzip their jacket. Now, Natalie smashes a chair into the window, breaking it. Brenda looks up.
I said perform the graduate end scene. That's what I
Good call. And then Brenda looks up like, what the fuck? And then the poor girl wearing the killer's coat who was just coming in for a swim. Like, okay.
Does everyone own that coat?
Thank you. It's, I made the same comment. But it's like, okay, I get it. You know, it's clearly, you know, fall. It's cold. But
well, it was supposed to take place in winter, but at the location, it was extra warm, or it was warmer than usual.
Right.
So they had to turn it into like a fall movie.
Yeah.
But still, like, no reason to have a winter coat.
Well, not only a winter coat, but like with the hood pulled up and like a fucking balaclava on. Like, what the fuck is going on with this campus? Like, nobody has any blood. It's like, oh, anyway. So it's like this poor girl was wearing the coat. Natalie's all upset because, you know, she done fucked up. And then we cut to Brenda and Natalie talking, you know, about how freaked out Natalie is. And she's saying maybe she should leave for the weekend, you know, go home. And Brenda's trying to convince her to stay and go to the Stanley Hall frat party with her. And then this is where Natalie admits to Brenda that she knew Michelle, and we get the flashback sequence giving the backstory. So we find out that Natalie and Michelle were, you know, driving along. They were in high school. They were, they decide to do the gang initiation prank, the urban legend. So they're driving around, their lights off. A guy drives by, flashes the lights. They turn around and start chasing after him. Michelle's flashing the lights on and off, kind of blinding the guy. The guy gets run off the road into an accident. He ends up dying. The judge is lenient on them, giving them a year probation because, you know, clearly it was a prank gone wrong.
Or they had money.
That's probably more accurate. So it's like, okay, so he's, you know, they basically get away with murder. So then we cut from there to the creepy janitor, like, mopping up outside of Paul's room. And we see Paul going through his desk and was he in the paper office?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
He's cleaning out his desk.
Cleaning out his desk at the paper. Okay. And we see the janitor mopping up. He's boxing up his stuff, and he finds a newspaper article about the Stanley Hall massacre and how Professor Wexler was the only survivor of the incident when he was a student there. We see the creepy janitor look at him, and then he sees Paul reading the article, and he scurries off. And then we cut to the dean going to his car in the parking garage. Now, he stops and checks his back seat, but while he's doing that, we get the Reese jump scare because she comes up behind him. And then Reese starts telling the dean that she feels they need more security guards for the weekend, with it being the anniversary of the massacre and with the tragedies that have already happened on campus. And she goes on to tell him that now she can't find, was it Damon Brooks? I couldn't remember his last name. Now she's like, I can't find Damon Brooks, and I'm starting to fear that he's missing. He goes, I love this part. You want to say it, Reese?
No, you can say it. I just love this part, too.
He goes, he's not missing. It's the weekend. He's probably shacked up at a motel with some girl or a guy, farm animal, whatever. Weren't you ever 18? And she goes, not that kind of 18. Clearly, the dean got up to some freaky shit in his youth.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, man. So now the dean tells her that he's not giving her any extra guards. He tells her to not contact parents or police without his say-so.
Basically, I'm an old white man. You need to listen to what I'm saying.
Exactly. Listen, respect my authority. So then he goes, is that understood? And she's like, uh-huh. And as soon as he turns around, she mouths asshole at him. And she takes off. She's like, whatever, and leaves. Now, as soon as she leaves the area, the dean is unlocking his car, and the fucking killer pulls a fucking Pet Cemetery and slashes. Yelp.
Oh, I don't care what it is. I always hate the Achilles slash. Oh, yelp.
It's always painful. It's like, oh. And so there's yet another urban legend, because that's what that's based off of. So cuts his tendon. He falls down. The killer slowly climbs out from under the car. He starts crawling away. Now, again, this irks me in every movie when I see this. He's crawling away. The killer takes the car out of park, so it starts rolling forward toward the dean. Just move out of the fucking way. Don't crawl in a straight line. No one's steering the car. Just move. But no, he doesn't. He continues to scurry down the path. And he gets to the entrance to the parking garage where there's the tire spikes, and the car hits him and impales him onto the tire spikes. So dead Dean. It's like, what the fuck, dude?
I will say he probably, besides one other death that comes a little bit later, I think he has the worst death.
Yeah, that is a pretty rough one.
Yeah,
because of the tendon.
Yes. You'll know what the worst one is later, people. You'll know when I say it.
So now we cut outside the frat house. We see the third act storm starting up, and we hear people chanting Hootie. I wrote minus the blowfish. Inside, we cut to Parker and some frat douches using a beer bong on his dog and forcing him to drink beer.
Spuds McKinney, Spuds McKenzie Jr. is what I wrote. There's something you gotta look up, kids.
Right. Simpler time. Simpler time.
Yeah.
So we see Sasha watching from nearby, looking unamused, and some random nerd comes up and starts trying to explain to her how the random screams that are spliced into the music are actually from a 911 call where someone was really murdered, you know, because they were murdered on the phone trying to get help. Sasha looks less than impressed, and he's like, isn't it cool? Like, he's just, he's so terrible. And then we cut to Nat showing up at the party. Brenda meets up with her, goes to get them both a beer. Paul comes up to Natalie and shows her the paper with Wexler. Now, we cut to the two of them kind of off alone talking about Paul's theory, which is that in exchange for Wexler's silence and compliance, he gets a job for life at the college. But every year on the anniversary of the massacre, he goes a little more nuts, and this year he finally snapped. So he thinks it's Wexler. Then Paul explains how he already tried calling the cops, but the dean beat him to the punch and warned them to expect prank calls, and he even gave them Paul's name, so the cops aren't coming. And I said, and because this is clearly hella sexy talk, they start to make out. Like, really? Like, it just seemed very forced, you know? So now Brenda walks in, catches them, kind of shoves Natalie's beer at her. She's like, it's light beer, which, again, I don't know why that made me laugh. But when she goes, here you go, it's light beer, I just started giggling the way she was very aggressive. But anyway,
well, she was hurt.
Right. But it's like, I get it. But why say the line, it's light beer? Like, it just seems
Maybe she has an eating problem or something, or she only eats salads. I don't know. She's probably a healthy eater, so she's calling her up for it.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Movie magic.
It just seemed like a weird line to me. But so now we cut to Brenda outside crying, and Paul's looking confused as fuck. He's like, what did I do? And Natalie's like, I fucked up. So we cut to Reese doing her rounds, and we get the creepy janitor jump scare, so another old man jump scare.
He tells them
it's off limits, too. Like, where is off limits to the janitor?
they're trying really hard to make him out to be the killer.
Oh, they really, and they keep trying. But it's like, yeah, good point. Why would the faculty offices, like the hallway, be off limits to the janitor who has to clean in there?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. So she goes to Wexler's office and sees that it's been broken into. And she starts investigating, finds the place was ransacked, and sees that the axe from earlier is missing. And I know, Dawn, you said you had a comment about this, so you go ahead.
Oh, because she slips and falls right after this.
Right.
In blood. So I wrote, you got Reese in my blood. No, you got blood, or you got blood in my Reese.
You know what I love about this scene in particular is when it pans up to the overhead shot, there is a shitload of blood on the floor. How the fuck did she not see it? She had a flashlight out, and it's like she sees that the place is ransacked, but there's like an entire 6-foot area covered in blood. And you didn't see shit until you fell in it.
Or stepped in it beforehand, too, because it's, like, right there.
Right. Oh, that part cracked me up. So now we cut back to the party, and Paul is trying to warn Parker that he needs to end the party early because there's a killer on the loose. Of course, you know, Parker is a douche and accuses Paul of being the killer. He's like, oh, maybe you lost your mind when you lost your job at the paper and you decided to kill everybody using urban legends. You know, so now you'll have a great story to get back in the paper's good graces.
He's making it very easy for us not to give a damn when he dies.
Right. Exactly. So now Paul leaves pissed off. Sasha is not impressed with Parker's douchebaggery and goes off to the radio station. And then Parker gets a phone call. They just go, you're going to die tonight. And I so wanted them to just say Sydney. Because it sounded so much like the scream voice. Oh, man. So Parker looks the caller ID and sees that it's coming from Damon Brooks. Parker guesses it's the urban legend where the call is coming from inside the house and begins to go looking upstairs. And the caller tells him, wrong urban legend. It's the one about the old lady who dries off her wet dog in the microwave. And Parker rushes downstairs to the kitchen and opens the microwave to find exploded Hootie.
Which, now that is the worst death, because here we go. You know, in my opinion, that killer could do whatever he wants to any of those students, but now you killed the dog, and now I fucking hate them, and I hope they die.
Yep.
The dog had nothing to do with it.
I've said this on so many episodes. You don't kill the dog. Like, it's not okay. It always bothers me. But so Parker freaks out, and he runs to the bathroom to puke. Starts, like, retching in the toilet, and the killer comes up behind him and knocks his ass out. Then he wakes up, and he's tied up. The killer shoves a funnel down his throat, pours Pop Rocks in, and then Drano.
Yes.
Well, it's not quite soda, but it did the trick. Because dead Parker. Then we cut to Reese on the phone with the cops, and they're telling her, because of the storm, all of the officers are tied up dealing with problems caused by the storm, so they can't come and help her out. So it's like, oh, sorry, you know, we know you found blood everywhere, and there might be a killer on the loose, but, gee, our guys really got to deal with these downed power lines right now, you know? We can't send someone to help out with a murder. Ugh. It just seems a little odd to me. But we cut to Nat trying to call Paul, no answer. Cut to Sasha on the air talking to a couple that got stuck mid-coitus, like a pair of dogs. And in the background, in the sound engineer booth, we see the killer coming up behind the sound guy. The room goes black. We hear kind of like a muffled, you know, whoop, and then the call gets cut off. Sasha's like, you know, what the hell's going on? Turns around, sees the black room, goes right up to the glass. The lights come out, and the killer's right up against the glass. She screams and runs, killer hatchets the window open, and comes after. But Sasha's still on the air. So Natalie is sitting at the party and hears Sasha, you know, screaming on the air. And Natalie is trying to figure out, like, you know, what's going on. We need to help her. And then Nerdy Dude comes out. He's like, no, she's doing a performance art piece to commemorate the Stanley Hall massacre. And then Natalie, like, leaves to go try to call. And he's standing there listening. He goes, oh, she's good. I got goosebumps. Like, he's just such an idiot.
I wrote a little thing. I was like, can't the killer just come back and kill this guy real quick? Just for me.
Right. He's in two scenes and he's annoying in both of them.
Yeah.
But so Natalie tries to call the radio station, of course, gets a busy signal. And then we cut back to Sasha trying to run from the killer. But the killer catches up to her and kind of flips her over the railing of the stairs. She grabs onto the ledge and is holding on for dear life while the killer is taking out the axe and starts swinging it at her. Forcing her to drop down. She ends up, it wasn't a huge drop, but it was enough of a drop to hurt her because she's now limping away and the killer is chasing after her. Sasha makes it to the elevator. The doors close just in time as the killer swings the axe, misses her. The killer sees the elevator's going up, and then just slowly and leisurely follows behind her. And then we cut to Reese driving. She hears Sasha on the radio and starts heading toward the radio station. Now we cut back to Sasha hiding in the studio again. Natalie gets to the building. Sasha sees Natalie and calls for help. The killer comes up behind Sasha. She says she doesn't want to die. Killer hacks her to death. and then waves at Natalie, who runs away. So now we cut to Natalie going to Paul's dorm. Paul comes in behind her, noticeably nervous and annoyed that she left the party, and tells her that she should have stayed there. She wants to know where he was. He tells her he was running all over campus looking for help, but the dean is gone and he can't find Reese anywhere, and his phone is dead. So Natalie picks up the phone and checks it with him turned around.
Is Paul the killer?
Exactly.
Yeah, I wrote a note here that said, yeah, movies really trying really hard to make it look like everybody else is the killer.
Oh, yeah. It's just throwing red herrings at us left and right.
Yeah.
And he's like, what are you doing? I just told you that the phone was out. Didn't you believe me? And she's just kind of looking at him like a little squirrely. And he convinces her. He's like, you know, I'm on your side. He's like, I'm, I'm, I'm here with you. I'm on your side. And the two of them start to leave. Brenda comes running up and tells them that she heard Sasha on the radio and wants to know what happened. Natalie tells her that she's dead and that they need to find help. So the three of them run off to Paul's car and take off. We see Reese at the radio, like, get to the radio station. She finds dead Sasha and then tries to call the dean, but obviously can't get through. So she's just batting a thousand here. Can't get the cops to come help. Can't get a hold of the dean because he's dead. You know, can't catch up to anybody before they get killed. And then we cut back to Brenda, Paul, and Natalie in Paul's car. And Nat comments on a funny smell. And Paul's like, I don't smell anything. And it's like, well, you know, most people don't smell their own car stank.
Basically what it is movie just basically just told you something's coming.
Yeah. It's like, hey, just in case you haven't already followed us that we want you to think Paul's the killer, let's just point this out now. So then Brenda points out a gas station up ahead and says maybe we should check and see if their phones work. Paul begrudgingly agrees, and they pull in. As soon as he runs inside, Brenda agrees with Natalie that something does stink in the car. Then she apologizes to Natalie for flipping out, saying, you know, I didn't mean to freak like that when I saw you guys kissing. She's like, clearly you guys like each other and you should be together. He's all yours. And then we hear...
Aww, she has her blessing.
Right? And then
movie can end! Oh, no? Okay.
Nope. We get Chekhov's watch alarm sound again. So they both look at each other, jump out of the car, go around to the trunk, which obviously the smell is much stronger because Brenda starts to gag. They open the trunk and we see dead Wexler in the trunk. So it's
like I said, you can have
what?
Yeah. Well, I love this because they both look scared. They look at the gas station. Paul is looking over his shoulder at them, sees them looking in his trunk, and she goes, like I said, he's all yours. And they run away like zoinks, yo. And Paul drops the phone and gives chase. So I love this part because while they're running through the forest, Brenda just fucking wipes out and Natalie keeps on going. She's like, you're on your own, bitch. And just kept going. But then eventually she stops and realizes that Brenda isn't there and calls out to her. We hear Brenda scream and then Paul calling for Natalie. So she starts running again. She makes her way out to the road, flags down the first car she sees. And of course, it's the creepy janitor. And he stops and gives her a ride.
Weird janitor for the save.
Right. And then he's like, oh, if you're cold, there's a coat in the back seat. She looks back, and of course, it's the killer's coat, because clearly there was like a sale at Target, and everyone bought the same coat. But so Natalie tells him that she wants to get out now, and he starts to act a little weird. He's like, oh, what are you talking about? No. And she starts to spaz and yank on the door handle, saying, please let me out. And he goes,
I ain't going
to
bite you.
Right? He goes, the door won't open from the inside. She continues yanking on the handle and screaming. He goes, what's wrong with you? Stop that. And then we see another car coming toward them with no headlights on. And the janitor goes, oh, freaking kids or dumb kids or something. And he goes to flash his high beams at the driver. Natalie freaks out, screams no. He turns the lights on and off. The car spins around. We see that it's Paul's car. Starts following the janitor, flashing the lights, chasing him off the road. Eventually, the killer runs him off the road. They crash into a ditch. Now, it wasn't a huge ditch. It was a little ditch on the side of the road. And it wasn't even a big crash. Natalie was perfectly fine, but somehow the janitor is dead? Like, he had blood coming off his head. His eyes were wide open. He wasn't moving. So, like, how did the janitor die from that? Was he made of glass? What happened?
I don't know. Movie's got a movie.
I guess so. But anyway, Natalie gets out and runs away.
Did you see all the blood coming from his head?
It was a little trickle. But Natalie runs away, and we cut to Reese at her office getting her big gun and looking at friggin' Pam Grier for inspiration.
I wrote, why is she the only campus cop? Like, why were right. all the other ones?
And that's a big fucking campus, too.
Yeah.
So Nat gets
back. Even N-Trip at least had four, you know.
Right. And then Natalie gets back to the campus and runs up to one of those, like, emergency phones with the little light on top. She starts calling for help, but no one's answering. And then we hear a scream from up ahead. She looks up, sees the boarded up Stanley Hall, and we see one window a few floors up has a flickering light in it. So she goes to investigate. Once inside, she finds dead Parker, then dead Dean, and eventually dead Damon. And she makes her way to the room with the light, and we see a bunch of candles everywhere. And she sees a seemingly dead Brenda laying on the bed. Nat sits by the bed and starts crying. Brenda sits up behind her and punches her the fuck out.
What? Oh, the big what? Twist.
What? Dun, dun, dun.
What?
And now we cut to a blurry screen, and we like a first person view, and we see the hooded killer walking up, and they pull the hood back, and it's Natalie. She goes, gotcha. Or it's, I'm sorry, it's Brenda. She goes, gotcha. And Brenda's, we get the Brenda parlor scene now where she's going to explain to Natalie why she's doing what she's doing. She even has a projector to help her explain.
That's my favorite thing. Like, I made a PowerPoint presentation for you.
Exactly. It's so fucking silly. So she shows Natalie a picture of a random guy. And she explains, and she's like, do you recognize him? And she's like, how about now? And she goes to the next slide, and we see the same guy in the newspaper, and it's talking about his death from an accident of a prank gone wrong. So it's the dude that Natalie and Michelle killed. Turns out this was Brenda's boyfriend, and he was going to propose to her, and they were going to get married and live happily ever after, but then Michelle and Natalie took everything from her. So Brenda tells
her, I was going to marry him next year.
Right. She's like, he didn't have the money to get me the ring yet. He was going to propose to me the following year or the following summer or something like that. And then Brenda tells her, she's like, since you used an urban legend to kill my boyfriend, I decided to use urban legends to kill all of your friends and now you. She then reveals what Natalie's urban legend is, and it's the kidney thief. So she pulls back a sheet on a bunch of surgical implements. And we cut to Reese outside. She sees the emergency phone light, and she sees the room with the candles up in Stanley Hall. And I wrote, Reese to the rescue! She takes off. Oh. And then inside, Brenda's explaining to Nat how she'll get away with it, because she plans to make it look like it was Wexler that killed himself, his students, and then himself in the same manner as the subject that he teaches. And she goes, it's so fucking clean! And I was like, it really isn't, though. Natalie begs Brenda to, you know, to stop. She gags her and starts stabbing her with a scalpel. She's like, is the kidney here? I never was quite good at anatomy. She goes, ah, what do I care? I'm just going to reach in and grab the first organ I see. Then we see Reese comes in behind her and pulls her gun on her, tells her to back up. And she goes, oh, great, rent a cop to the rescue. Reese forces Brenda to back up. She frees Nat's one hand, and so Nat can free herself, and then gets Brenda to go up against the wall so she can frisk her. While she's frisking her, Brenda yanks a knife and cuts Reese across the chest, forcing Reese to drop the gun. There's a struggle. Eventually, Brenda gets the gun, shoots Reese, and then pulls the gun on Natalie. So while Natalie is being held at gunpoint, Brenda tells her, she's like, it's not quite an urban legend, but it'll have to do. And she goes on to tell her how her death will force a devastated Paul right into her arms, and he'll write a story based on the entire event, and he'll have his Pulitzer, and she'll have him. And then she goes, I wasn't going to let you take another guy from me, Natalie. And then we hear a slow clap coming from behind, and Paul enters the room. And he acts all impressed and tells her that he's pissed at Natalie for making him lose his job at the paper. And, you know, he tells Brenda, he's like, but I'm going to need some information. He goes, I'm going to need details on how Wexler did it. You know, details that only you can give me. And Brenda gets all excited, like she believes him. And then he goes, here, just give me the gun and I'll finish it up. And she looks at him, she goes, you're cute, Paul, but you're not that fucking cute. And she pulls the gun on him, too. Which I was happy, because I'm like, if she falls for that, I'm going to be really bummed out.
And then she does the eeny, meeny, miny.
And then...
No, bitch!
Yeah. Because she goes, who should I kill first? And does that. Oh. And then Reese pops up and goes, Mo! And shoots her. So now shoots Brenda in the arm. She drops the gun. Natalie picks up the gun and points it at Brenda. And she goes, "Are you going to shoot me, Natalie? What kind of friend are you?" Which that cracked me the fuck up. And then she just rushes at her screaming. She goes, "Rah!" And Natalie shoots her right out the fucking window. So Brenda falls, what was it, like 4 stories?
It was high.
It was up there. So she got shot in the chest and fell out of a window. So then Reese is talking about how she thought she'd have to wait until she was on the force to get shot. She's like, "I need some help." So Paul and Natalie go to get Reese help. And as they're driving away, they discuss how all of this will become an urban legend of its own. You know, she goes, "Of course the details will change." She goes, "I'll become a man, you'll become a cop, but the story will go on." And Paul goes, "Okay, but if this is an urban legend, then where's the twist?" Right as we see Brenda sitting up in the back seat with the axe.
Like, Paul, I wrote, like, you guys didn't check to see the body before you left. Like, your car was right there. Like,
Or you think the cops would have been there and been like, "Where is this lady?"
Exactly. Well, the cops didn't get there yet. They're because we get sirens a little later.
Oh, but so they left without even.
I think they called and explained and then took the fuck off.
Don't you think the cops would have told them to stay there because they had questions?
Yeah, none of this part makes sense.
Yeah, not at all.
So Paul sees her in the rear view. He ducks the axe swing just in time. And then Brenda and Natalie start fighting. And Paul's like veering around on the road, trying to like knock Brenda off balance. And eventually he rams into a guardrail on a bridge, sending Brenda clear out the window and over the bridge into the river below, which is the same river from the opening sequence.
Seatbelts. That's all I wrote. Seatbelts.
Well, then she's laying there doing the dead man's float. So, and then we hear the sirens in the distance. They hug, and we cut to a fireplace with someone narrating the story. And it's a whole new group of students. And the one guy's telling the story, claiming that it happened at that very school. Just
I
like
to call it Parker Jr.
Yeah, exactly. And he also had the M&M hair. But and it's just like the Stanley Hall massacre from the Stanley Hall massacre conversation from the beginning, where they're like, "No, every school has that story. It's fake, blah, blah, blah." They go through the whole scenario. And then they start making jokes. The one guy's like, "Yeah, you know, Brenda," or he goes, "Natalie was my cousin's roommate." And then the other one speaks up and goes, "Yeah, and Brenda's that girl from the Noxzema commercials." And I just went, "Womp, womp."
Talking through the fourth wall.
Deadpool's not the only one who does it.
They're so funny. But then someone speaks up and says that she believes him, but you didn't tell it right. And the camera pans around and we see it's Brenda. And she goes, "Okay, listen up, guys, because this is how the story really goes." She smiles at the camera, fade to black, credits. So,
and you notice she's wearing the blue scarf around her neck?
Yep.
Because that's an urban legend itself.
Yeah, yep. That if you take off the scarf, your neck or your head falls off.
Yep. But here's the thing. Now, think about it. I know we talk about crazy strength a lot, but this girl was shot in the gut by the big gun. Keep in mind, that was Reese's big gun. She fell 4 stories. Then she was thrown through a windshield and down into a river below. How the fuck is she still alive? She's not Jason. She's not Freddy. She's not a supernatural killer. She's just some random student. Like, the fuck? You know, it's like, that's a little much. But so that is urban legend. One of the things I wanted to comment on, this is something that I mentioned in the beginning from when I saw it opening night. There's 2 times that this has happened to me where I jokingly said the ending, not knowing that it was going to be real. Like, I totally was just making a joke. I went with my friend Melissa. And we used to go see all these, like, you know, Scream 2, I Know What You Did Last Summer, all that kind of shit. I never did get to see Scream in the theater, but after seeing Scream on video, I was going to all of these. So as soon as we got there, we're bullshitting before the movie. And I was like, "How much you want to bet it's the Noxzema girl?" Like, just joking. Like, seriously, not it. And we were like, oh, yeah, that's good. And the whole movie, I was actually falling down the Wexler rabbit hole. I'm like, oh, it's the professor. You know, I didn't think it was actually the Noxzema girl. I was just joking around. And sure as shit, it was the Noxzema girl. I'm like, well, how do you like that? The other time that that happened is when I went to go see The Sixth Sense with my buddy Ito. And we called him Ito. His actual name was Mike. He looked like Judge Ito. But anyway, we went to go see Sixth Sense on opening night. And we had been seeing the fucking trailers and the commercials nonstop. Like, that movie had a ridiculous ad campaign. And everyone, oh, I see dead people. I see dead people. I see dead people. So we sit down in a packed theater, and I lean over to him joking, saying, how much you want to bet Bruce Willis is a ghost? And the woman behind me, well, the woman behind me got pissed. She goes, if that's the fucking end of the movie, I'm going to be really fucking mad. And I was like, oh, shit. And then when it started leading in that direction, I'm like, oh, shit, she's going to cut me.
I will say, halfway through watching Sixth Sense, I said that myself. I was like, I bet you he's dead. I bet you this whole time he's been dead.
But see, again, this is before, like, I was saying it as a joke. Like, I didn't know anything about the movie other than the trailer, and I totally didn't expect that to be real, but it was. So, anywho, some trivia on the movie. We got, apparently Sarah Michelle Gellar accepted the role of Sasha, but had to back out due to conflicts with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, scheduling conflicts.
Can we talk about how, ironically, years later, Rebecca Gayheart caused a car crash that killed somebody?
This is true.
Yeah.
This is very true. I didn't write that in here, but yeah, I forgot about that.
That, of course, the killer would, like, and no offense to Rebecca Gayheart, but yeah, like, it totally, like, happened years later. Like, she ended up killing somebody with her car.
Yep. It's fucked up. But then also, apparently, Melissa Joan Hart turned down the role for Natalie, which I had one of these episodes. I had mentioned that I thought Melissa Joan Hart was in more of these, but I was totally not thinking of the right person. But that would have been funny to see her in here. So now I did write down a list of the urban legends used in the movie. So we get obviously the first one. Michelle being murdered with the killer in the back seat. These are urban legends that are reenacted in the film, and then there's other ones that are just referenced. So there's the Bloody Mary thing where they do it at Ed Stanley Hall, the Pop Rocks and soda, the Damon hanging from the tree, obviously, the gang headlight initiation. Natalie finding her roommate strangled to death. The whole, aren't you glad you didn't turn on the lights? The ankle slasher under the car. Oh, I fucking hate that one. The fact that the, whatchamacallit, the 911 call, the whole murder being spliced into the music. I didn't know this going in, but apparently there was an urban legend saying that Love Roller Coaster actually contains a murder scream. I had never read that before doing research for this. I'm like, wait, really? So thought that's kind of funny. And then, of course, the old lady, what dries her dog in the microwave. Yeah. Now, the ones that were referenced is the birth control with the baby aspirin, you know, being replaced. The woman having to have her stomach pumped after performing oral sex on many men. The couple suffering from penis captivus, which I love the fact that it's called that. And then Professor Wexler talking about the man upstairs calling from inside the house with the babysitter, and then the spider eggs in bubble yum, and of course the gerbil up the bum. So thought those were all funny. But so overall,
you know, every time I hear about that one, I just think of Mallrats.
Of course. How else am I going to get the gerbil out? Oh, I love that movie so much. But yeah, overall, I would say if you like 90s horror, this is a fun ride. It's pretty weak by today's standards. And man, the red herrings are, they beat you over the fucking head with them. Like, they are not subtle. at all. But
they really were trying very hard to make it look like everyone but Natalie was the kid. It's this one, obviously.
See, and that's what I like so much about Cry Wolf, because Cry Wolf does the same thing, but it's a little more subtle. Like, it's not beating you over the head with it, like, you know, hey, this person that was totally normal last scene, now look, maybe they're the killer. Like, everybody seemingly has a motive for why they could be someone you wouldn't want to trust, which I liked. I liked how they did that. I don't think that movie gets nearly enough attention. In fact, when it was on the voting block for this round, I think it only got like 4 votes. One of them was mine. it is a good flick, though, if you haven't seen it. Now, have you guys seen the sequels to this movie?
I've seen the next one. I've seen part 2. I didn't know there was a part 3. And while I was watching this, I researched, and they're doing a remake, I guess.
Oh, or, no shit.
Yeah, because both the characters of Reese and Brenda are played by those characters, or played by those actors. So Rebecca Gayheart and Loretta, is that her name?
Divine.
Yeah. Loretta Divine, yeah.
Yeah, are signed on to do it.
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, that's one of those IMDb things. You know, it's possible someone just put.
True.
I didn't know there was a third one either.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't until, we're going probably about 6 or 7 years ago. I decided, I'm like, hey, I don't have these movies in my collection. Let me go on Amazon and see what we got here. And there was they were individually packaged, but it was a 3-pack of all 3 Urban Legend movies for like $20. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, I was expecting to pay like $10 a pop anyway, so why not? And it's bad. It's real. It was like a direct to DVD. It might have even been VHS. I don't think it was that long ago. I think it was probably DVD.
Urban Legends, Bloody Mary.
Yep. It ain't good. I mean, it's not terrible. It's like I've seen far worse. But yeah, there's really no reason to watch it. Like, it's not anything to write home about.
But you know, finally, I think I did see this.
It's kind of just meh. Final cut. I hated when I first saw it.
I remember couldn't tell you anything about it except for that final scene, that last scene in the hospital. That's the only thing I can tell you.
That is a fun callback.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I don't know. It's not as bad as I remember. When I first saw it in the theater, I think I had just run out of patience for these types of movies. And I remember me and Jess saw it, well, again, opening night, because I really liked this one when I first saw it. I was like, oh, I want to see the sequel. I want to see the sequel. So we go, and I'm like, this is really dumb. And then seeing it again years later, like kind of like with fresh eyes, I'm like, I don't hate it. Like, it's, I kind of view it the same way I view Scream 3, where, yeah, it's not the best, but it's also pretty fucking entertaining for what it is. I do actually like the killer's outfit in that one, the whole fencing mask and like the weird rain slicker. It just looks cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't mind covering that one on this show eventually. But anyone have anything they wanted to add to Urban Legend?
No.
No.
Not, like I said, it's not that I don't like the movie. It's just I remember liking it more. And now that I think I've revisited it years later, that it's like, oh, it doesn't really hold up for me kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I mean, it's, I don't dislike it per se, but it's definitely weaker than I remember. So,
yep.
You got anything, Reese?
I've got nothing. I'm still in shock that there was a third one, which even though I believe I've seen, but I don't know.
It's one of those. You know, hey, we got the license. Let's make a sequel that has nothing to do with it and cash in on the name.
Right. Well, they finally cashed in on the Bloody Mary aspect.
Right.
That's true.
I wonder how many horror movies are based on that legend. You know? Because, I mean, obviously Candyman. You know, you got something there.
with the whole Bloody Mary.
Well, remember Supernatural, the whole first season was all urban legends.
That's true. Oh, man, I forgot about that. I still, one of these days, I have to watch all of it.
I've never seen an episode. I just never, for some reason, been drawn into it. I think because I had watched Buffy, like, I was like, oh, I don't really want to sit through another thing that's kind of Buffy-esque kind of thing.
Right. I watched the first three seasons pretty regularly because Jess was really into it, so I would watch them with her. And then I just kind of fell out of it, and she continued watching, I want to say, up to, like, 7 or 8. She watched several more seasons. But yeah, I mean, like, I have friends that are diehard Supernatural fans. Like, that is their fandom. And, like, I know there's a huge fandom for it. And some of the stuff I've heard about it does sound fun. Like, it does actually sound like a very amusing show. I know my sister loves it. So one of these days, it's on my list of many things, which, Maurice, you'll be happy to know. Remember how I said I'm going to try to set aside time each week to try to watch at least one new movie that's not for the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
I watched 2 last week.
2. Ooh. Wow. What were they?
A Scare Package on Shudder. Which,
oh, I love that movie.
That was really fucking good.
Yeah, it was.
That's one of those ones that if we come back around to anthology movies, I definitely, definitely want to watch that again. Because it was very funny. And then I finally watched The Color Out of Space.
Even though I own it, I have not watched it yet.
Definitely worth it. I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't want to ruin anything for you, so I won't say nothing, but it's a solid flick. And again, it's Nick Cage in a weird fucking role.
Right.
You know, it's good.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
Well, I'm just saying, it's good times.
I was really hoping you were going to say you watch Beach House.
No, but actually I added that to my queue. I was like, okay, I'm going to slowly make my way through the queue. I went and put a bunch of films in my queue that I want to make sure I watch. So it's on there. I will get to it. I also put in that, what is it? Mayhem, the movie with, oh my God, I forget his name. The actor's name. He played Glenn in The Walking Dead.
Oh, Stephen Young.
Thank you. Yeah. Yoon. Yeah. Stephen Yoon.
It's probably pronounced Young, but who knows?
But he's, I guess it's kind of Belko experiment, kind of. But I read some fun things about it. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. So that's next up on my list. But anyway, I'm rambling. So let's get our social medias out there. If you guys aren't following us on Facebook and the Instagrams, we are the Boogeyman's Closet. Maurice handles our Twitter, which is
at Boogeyman's The.
Thank you, good sir. Now, as we said at the top, this rounds out our school horror movies, and we're going to be starting our Halloween horror movies coming up next. The votes have all been tallied, so I will be, by the time you hear this, I will probably have posted the winners on social media. But definitely keep your eyes on social media, because we are going to be doing our October giveaway next week. We're going to start our October giveaway. So we're still doing giveaways every single month and right up through December. So get in on that. We just posted our September winner, and these prize packages are getting better and better, guys. So just keep on trying, because there's plenty of stuff to give away. So any final things before we wrap this up?
Get well, Susie.
Yeah, get well.
Yes.
Or indeed. I'm going to have to just take this spot again.
Well, and as always, Dawn, thank you for joining us.
Oh, yes, no problem.
It is always a pleasure.
But we got to leave a pause for the applause that you're going to put in post right here.
Ah, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sit down, guys. I'll be back. Don't worry.
He's going to put the slow clap in.
Paul's slow clap. Nice. But all right, guys, well, I guess we should wrap it up. So this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Tune in next week for your regular scheduled program.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.